to Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Bumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Coming to you live like we are every Friday from Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street. Sean Stiers with you. Evan Sharpley is going to be along here shortly. He is en route, I am told. So Evan will be here very soon. Five Star Dive Bar, our home away from home on Fridays from noon to 1 for Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. The lunch special today is a breakfast grilled cheese. Sounds real tasty with ham, bacon, egg, and cheese, and a side of tater tots as well. You get all that for just $8. So stop on by for lunch today. That is the lunch special. $8, breakfast grilled cheese, ham, bacon, egg, and cheese, all kinds of protein for you on this Friday, on a Friday that's a little bit chilly outside once again. But we'll get it warmed up back again, hopefully very soon, as long as it's not raining. Also, our sponsors, of course, Reliable Roofing, and Evan will tell you about that when he is here and ready to go. Sharpley Training, Evan's baby, is our title sponsor. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. You can also visit sharpleytraining.com. You can also search for Sharpley Training on pretty much any social media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find out all the details you need to about Sharpley Training there. Or again, you can call 574-226-8234. They have both fitness classes for adults, whether you're a mom, a dad, male, female, whatever, and also personal training with Evan for sports-specific training, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, softball, on down the line, soccer as well, speed, power, all kinds of stuff. And we'll be talking with Evan about that in a little bit as well. South Bend Cubs play tonight here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. They host Peoria once again. They defeated Peoria 4-1 last night. Chicago Cub Victor Caratini, in his fourth consecutive day in his rehab stint with the South Bend Cubs, was 1-for-3 with a walk last night. Not sure if he'll be there again tonight. We'll have to talk to Darren Pritchett about that later today. But the initial word on Victor Caratini was he could be in South Bend for up to 6 days. And yesterday was day 4 of his rehab stint as Victor went, again, 1-for-3 in the South Bend Cubs 4-1 victory. And speaking of the South Bend Cubs, they are doing their scholarship once again. They are accepting scholarships for one of several $5,000 scholarships that are going to be awarded to college-bound baseball and softball players from the 11 counties surrounding Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. Eligibility rules and an application form for the annual scholarship were posted just today, as a matter of fact, on the First Source Bank Performance Center, website. So you can go there to find out more, firstsourcebankperformancecenter.com, and apply, whether you're a baseball player, softball player. And it is, if you're going to go to college, play at whatever school it happens to be, you can use this scholarship to help you out with your both your athletic and academic endeavors going forward once you head to college. And we're going to be talking here in just a second about the new sports wagering law that was passed this week in Indiana. And Armin Katayan, Emmy winner, a longtime CBS Sports journalist, as well as on HBO's Real Sports, he's going to be joining Darren and I at 5:07 tonight to discuss this topic as well. Armin is currently the anchor and executive producer at The Athletic, theathletic.com. He just began doing the website's first video content. He currently has a three-part series on the site, The Athletic, covering sports wagering. So we'll be talking to Armin Katayan tonight to discuss that more in detail. How's it going, Mr. Sharpley?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to see you.
I made it.
I know. It's one of those days. I thought for a while that I was going to be running a little bit behind, and then lo and behold, get here.
I was in the great city of Goshen.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you had a little bit, little ways to go.
Yeah, a lot of
to
lights.
To get to the five-star.
A lot of lights. Not a lot of...
Did you see the five-star beaming from miles away?
They put the bat signal out. I could see it.
That's right. That's right. Well, we've got a lot to get to today. I was just mentioning, of course, Sharpley training, and I know that at this time of year, especially as we get closer to summer, spring, summer, you've got a lot more of your individual kind of weekend sessions going on, sports-specific type stuff. What's going on right now?
Yeah, so we, we do have quite a few things, and it's always the most busy time for us as far as our strength and conditioning, speed and agility classes for middle school, high school, college age, just with it being no school.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot easier to
get in.
A lot
more free time.
But outside of that, you know, we have some different camps and things that we do. So, and we've talked on this show before, Slugfest, you know, we use data-driven, a blast motion sensor that goes on the bottom of the bat, where you're getting some feedback and analytics on swing speed and attack angle and things like that. So we have three different dates for that, both for youth middle school and then also for our high school group. So that's June 12th, July 10th, and then August 7th. Those are Wednesday nights that we'll be doing those. We also have some morning camps, some speed and agility for the younger group. Most of our middle school and high school age kids are doing our classes, which we have every day.
Okay.
The younger kids, if they'd like to do some speed and agility, parents want to drop them off and then get out of there, which sometimes is
unless,
a nice thing.
Unless the parents want to do speed and agility,
well,
too.
Well, I suppose they could if they want. They could if they want to. So we've got that on Thursdays and Fridays, one date in June, June 13th and 14th, one in July, the 11th and 12th, and then one in August, right before school starts, the 8th and the 9th. And those are two-hour camps, so we'll make sure that your kids are very tired once they get done.
That's right.
And probably some type of nap going on. We also have three dates where we're going to the Warren Dunes. In Michigan. It's a lot of fun, some endurance training. Those are June 15th, July 13th, and August 3rd. Those are Saturdays. So we get there around 8 or 9, right when it is opening up. And I saw recently, too, they're putting like $3 million into renovating the area there, kind of the welcome center.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's supposed to be pretty cool once they get done with that.
And you guys actually get out and run in the dunes and stuff, right?
Yeah, we do. So the hardest part is actually I don't know, it's all fairly difficult. It's a lot of fun.
It's supposed to be though.
But when we get done, we usually go and grab some barbecue and a couple Pepsis and
sure.
That's a lot of fun. So we run out to a place called Mount Randall. Now the run isn't really that far, but because you're going up and down the dunes.
Uh-huh.
And for a lot of people, when it's their first time, it's kind of like, whoa, this is...
what did I get myself into?
This is tough. So, and then we go to Mount Randall, and we'll climb it, whether we're just walking or doing some running. So,
all right.
It's a great workout. And then finally, we have three football ones. We're calling Friday Night Lights. One's June 7th, one's July 12th, and then one is August 2nd. The first one's actually in Coldwater, Michigan. So we're going to kind of tap into some of that, the Michigan group. But if you're
okay.
from Indiana and still want to come, you're more than welcome to. We'll have the one in July will be South Bend based. We'll likely get some Elkhart kids, at least Elkhart County kids there too, but really focus on a lot of the South Bend schools. And then the final one we'll have in August, right before the season really starts to kick off, will be in Elkhart.
All right, good stuff. And, of course, again, you can visit sharpleytraining.com or call 574-226-8234 or just go to any social media platform, search Sharpley Training, and you can find out all the information you need or give them any questions or any of that kind of stuff. All right, the big news of this week is Governor Holcomb signing the Indiana Sports Betting H-1015 into law earlier this week. It makes Indiana the second state to legalize wagering this year. And the Indiana legislature approved the bill April 25th, and this week was, on Wednesday, was Governor Holcomb's last chance to sign it, and he did. Had he passed on that, it would have become a law without his signature. So he went ahead and passed it. And part of this, we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty with it. But
yeah, I like you gave me some spark notes. There's some verbiage there.
And that's the thing. It's like, what exactly is this right. going to mean? And I think that's the, kind of the concept that everyone's still trying to maybe grasp right now, because this is going to be brand new to everybody.
Yeah.
So... the quote from Governor Holcomb, quote, gaming is a highly regulated industry that once had little competition but now does from surrounding states and new technology, and that's part of the key to this. By modernizing our laws, this legislation will spur positive economic growth for our state and for an industry that employs over 11,000 Hoosiers. Additionally, it will bring in new revenue, create hundreds of new jobs, both permanent and in construction. And he's going to direct the Indiana Gaming Commission to monitor for potential effects of the bill so they can make necessary changes to future legislative sessions. Now, here, again, is kind of the nitty-gritty as you break this down. And, again, there's a lot to it. So statewide mobile wagering okay. is going to be part of this. So you can have an app
yeah.
potentially on your cell phone, and you'll be able to do it, or your mobile device, or whatever it happens to be. There's going to be a tax rate of 9.5% of adjusted gross revenue, with a portion allocated to problem gambling. What problem gambling is, I guess we'll have to services for people who get themselves into trouble. I don't know.
So.
No wagering on esports or amateur athletes under the age of 18. So that's an interesting aspect of it. No esport gambling, and esports, of course, is
yeah.
becoming a huge thing right now.
Yeah, that's and the age of 18 too. I mean, you could
yeah.
have potentially though you could have some young freshmen in college.
True,
I suppose.
I wonder how that'll affect it. And there's an initial $100,000 fee for a vendor license.
Sure, there is.
And now that number, that's an interesting number, because I know we were talking yesterday. There's some other stuff online that says $500,000, and this one, which comes from. The Indianapolis Star, which is obviously closer to what's going on at the State House and everything, says $100,000. So that might have changed over time. But there's also $50,000 annual renewal payments. So essentially, if you're a casino or you want to start your own book, you have to put down $100,000 to be able to be involved in this. And then there's also limits on in-play betting and restriction on data sources. They're left to the discretion of the Indiana Gaming Commission. And again, that's a little bit above me right now. So just, again, a lot of information general, a lot of information in general, Evan. So what do you think of this whole thing?
Well, since I've not really wagered too often.
And neither have I.
I think it is. A lot of this is kind of above my pay grade as far as what it actually means.
Yeah.
You know, I've done some fun, you know, one game bets where if I lose, I had to wear an opposing team's jersey. But normally,
that's
not,
a little different.
Normally, not centered around.
Don't have to do that on your phone.
Money, yeah. you know, overall though, just you know, even though I'm not plugged into it, I'll say this: I don't necessarily think I'm opposed to it. It makes sense, I think, for the state government to want a piece of something if you're looking at trying to monetize it, and then also probably add some structure to maybe what is the Wild West as mm-hmm. far as sports betting is. I understand the business move to now try to get a slice of the pie. So if they're able to make some coin off of it, certainly. I just hope that the tax dollars go to improving something that I can maybe see and reap the benefits of.
Like good roads?
Yeah, sure. Why
maybe.
Not? Let's get rid of some of the potholes. And
that's right.
Yeah, I'd be good with that.
That's right. And that's obviously a big part of it with the tax revenue that's kind of come in. And Evan, now, as a former college athlete, what maybe are some challenges that you see in all of this?
I think it's still going to be hard to regulate. You can set up laws and you can put these stipulations in as far as acquiring a license and the taxable side of things. But because it's usually such a cash-driven business,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's going to be hard to reel in possibly maybe what's already been going on within the state of Indiana. So that's one thing. You know, I also think, though, if the state is regulating it the way they're going to, the NCAA probably has to be licking its chops a little bit, too, on how they can then
get their own piece of whatever pie it happens to be.
Especially in football. Well, I mean, really, if you look at March Madness, too, that would be a huge opportunity for teams and the NCAA. So,
well, I mean, the NCAA obviously distances itself from gambling.
Correct.
But, I mean, the one of the biggest things that makes it as popular as it is are the brackets, and whether they acknowledge that is gambling or not, it is.
The tournament itself is.
That's right.
It's huge.
It's basically the biggest gambling event of the year.
I think it's hard, you know, the college aspect of this, when you're looking at 18 to 22-year-olds already have entire fan bases kind of living and dying by their success. And whether or not it was legal to previously do it, they probably were doing it. But now I think that this may open up a new venue. And really, you know, social media has changed this completely, where you're seeing, you know, fans attacking players post-game, you know, even to the point of death threats at times, too.
Might even have more now.
That's what I mean, is I think it could open up.
That's a really good point, because I hadn't even thought about that aspect.
And that really is my experience. I'm not necessarily looking at it from the monetary side or what it's going to do, but I think, you know, it could open up a new can of worms on that aspect. On, man, there's a lot of kids now, really, I mean, young men, that are going to be opened up to things like that.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that we have to kind of clear up, I'm really not sure if this is professional sports only or college. And maybe that's something that, again, we're going to have Armin Katayan from The Athletic on. He worked for CBS Sports for a long time. He's won 8 Emmys, and he's done one of the first pieces that he did for The Athletic is a 3-part series on this subject. So that's why we're having him on tonight. So he's kind of done a deep dive on some of the things. New Jersey is where it started. This whole thing started with that New Jersey lawsuit that opened all of this up with the Supreme Court ruling. And that's one of the things. Is it professional only, or is it college? And we'll talk some specific stuff that deals with college and what the NCAA is already doing in a move with this in mind. But, you know, there are colleges, obviously, all over the country, Evan. But in order to wager on sports, you have to be in the state that makes it legal. And right now, I believe it's only 9, including Indiana. And it'll officially go into effect in July, but I think they're expecting all the infrastructure to be ready by September. But, I mean, you've got all these big universities, Notre Dame, IU, Purdue, Butler, in the state. If you're them, do you... Again, there's kind of a fine line there, because you are a university and the NCAA and everything else, but would you, down the road, look to embrace it, say, with your in-stadium experience, your own kind of thing in-stadium?
Well, fiscally, I think it would make sense to do and embrace that. And you're starting to see more universities now selling alcohol because there's an opportunity to make money within that experience. So I think IU just actually, they're doing that this fall now.
Mm-hmm.
That
and Purdue
selling,
too,
yeah,
I
they're
think.
They're selling alcohol in the stadium. So I think, you know, to embrace it, you look at the perspective, how can you create a unique experience around it? And I don't know what that exactly would look like for universities and programs. But if you are going to go all in versus a pushback, I think you would have to make it a positive experience versus it becoming a potential big problem.
Delaware, New Jersey, Mississippi, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Nevada, and now Indiana and Montana. Montana passed it earlier this year, and Indiana becomes the second state to pass it this year. And I guess Tennessee and Iowa are right there.
They're considering it?
Yep, they're considering it as well. So what I always wonder is, okay, so let's say that wagering on college sports is up for grabs, and then you've still got these students who are not making any of this revenue, and they live in the dorms, mm-hmm. or they have friends, or whatever it happens to be. So what happens when Joe Smith goes to the free throw line and he says, okay, the second free throw that I'm at the line
hey, buddy.
Tonight. That's right. I mean, what's to stop that kind of thing?
Probably nothing.
And that's the Pandora's box that I worry about with this whole thing. And that's why I wonder if the line is drawn between pro and college, and if there will be a barrier there.
Yeah, that's I mean, but I mean, there's been documentaries made on that's happening regardless of whether or not that's the case.
That's part of Armin Katayan's series as well, the scandal with Boston College football several years back.
But I mean, I don't think that, you know, any sport, I mean, it could happen really within any sport and any level. So I don't, again, I don't know if adding structure would eliminate that completely, but you certainly do bring up a good point is now if you are bringing that into play now at the collegiate level, there could be some problems there.
And the NCAA is certainly looking at the fact that they know this is coming and it's obviously expanding. It's going to be interesting maybe 5 years down the line to see how many states actually have it, how close to all 50 have it. But with more and more legalized gambling on the horizon, the NCAA is going to hear a proposal this month to institute what would essentially be the equivalent of the NFL's injury report. So what do you think about that? The NCAA college football basically having its own weekly injury report.
I think you'd have to if the move on the gambling side is very similar to what's happening in the NFL. I think it'd be a requirement. You know, to say buy or sell on it. I think I would say sell, but you know, within the environment that's being created with states passing these laws, I think you'd almost be forced to do that.
And that, like in the NFL right now, you have probable, questionable, doubtful, out. Again, this is part of a proposal that's going to the NCAA. Coaches would list players as either available, possible, or unavailable, and they would not have to list the specific injury, the body part in question. The biggest thing that, you know, the slippery slope is you've got privacy laws in college in place.
Right.
So I guess maybe the way around it that the NCAA is looking at is, well, you can say what degree of uncertainty there is for this player, but you don't have to say
what, exactly
what the injury is.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And again, because of the privacy laws and because of the fact that these student athletes are not getting paid in college, it's like you can want coaches to submit this stuff, but I have a hard time seeing how you could force them to.
Well, we know our own
stuff.
Eric Hansen. I don't know, would he like or dislike this? Because normally on Mondays at Brian Kelly's initial press conference, he asks about the injury report.
That's true. And Brian Kelly will actually say, he's questionable this week or whatever, and he'll tell you as much as he can. But I mean, what's to stop a coach from being Bill Belichick and essentially listing everyone as possible for the game, or you even list everyone as unavailable if you wanted to get really devious?
Yeah, copy paste.
That's right. Well, and Brian Kelly is a lot more forthcoming with this stuff than a lot of. I mean, more so than Nick Saban. I think Nick Saban gets the questions, and he basically, you know,
holds him pretty close.
Yeah, he's a Belichick clone, so he kind of shoots it right back. So where do you sit? Are you kind of in the middle on this, like I am?
I just think that with the nature of where things are going, I think that I think bettors would want that.
Bettors would,
yeah.
It benefits them, but does it benefit the other side, the coaches and the players in question?
I don't know if it's a detriment and if it's done the right way where you're not completely forthcoming. And I really don't think any program is probably going to do and take the time to list he has a grade 2 sprain of his ankle.
Sure.
It would just list, he's possibly going to.
Even though Brian Kelly would tell you that.
Well, he may tell us that, but, you know, actually taking the time and here's our injury report, if you do have to submit that, it's required by the NCAA.
I think
you're probably going to put the least amount of time and effort into it as possible.
Right, right. And you might have your sports information guy, just like they do with the weekly top 25 sometimes.
Probably what will happen.
check this.
There you go.
Let me ask you this final question on the subject of sports wagering. Baseball and gambling
I was waiting for this one.
Have you?
Yeah.
All right. So there's always baseball obviously has a big problem with sports gambling. I mean, this, as I told Darren last night, just thought about it, this is the 100th anniversary of the Black Sox scandal with Shoeless Joe Jackson and that whole crew. And, of course, Pete Rose is still banned from baseball for betting. So do you think baseball needs to embrace sports wagering to try to better engage and build its fan base.
I want to hear you first. You go first.
I think absolutely yes, because I think that where you are right now, you've got less and less actually going on the field. And this kind of wagering
that you can bet between pitches or at bats.
Well, and that's that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Because right now it's either strikeout or home run for the most part. And so now you can potentially bet on what the pitch is, the velocity of the pitch, ball or strike. You know, is it going to hit all these different options on every single pitch? So I think it stands.
Heck yes. Yeah. Let's do it.
That's where I am.
Steroids and gambling in baseball.
that's right. That's right. Well, I mean, we knew where you were on steroids, but just bring gambling in too.
You know, I think to engage more people. I mean, if you have a small bet, let's say a dollar bet per pitch or per at bat. You're probably going to pay attention a little bit more. It's probably going to be a little more engaging and fun.
Yeah. I don't know how many people are going to jump into that, but I would think that at some point, and that's where you obviously have to start worrying, is, you know, you lose a couple and then you start chasing and all that kind of stuff, how far down the rabbit hole you're going to go with it. But I absolutely think that it would help out quite a bit. And, I mean, when you look at all these different sports who are looking to add in-stadium
interaction.
Different interaction, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, whatever it happens to be, I think that they're all going to be looking to potentially do this kind of stuff.
I think that'd be a good move for baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, like
go ahead. We talked before on this is what's the median age of baseball fans?
Older.
And if you're trying to engage the millennial or 30 and younger group or even mid-30s to 40s, that I think that's a great way to do it.
Right.
You can still be on your phone. You're technically watching the game, and now you have a little vested interest in the outcome of the number 9 batter.
You know? There you go.
And you're there, you know, maybe you're at the stadium or you're watching, you know, the MLB package, and, you know, you hit your buddy while you're sitting there on the couch and be like, hey, you know, let's maybe there's a head-to-head version of this where, hey, I got, you know, there's $5 on this at bat. You know?
Well, and again, there's another level of this that we'll talk with tonight on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat with Armin Katayan. Part of his report, he talked to the guy who's the majority owner of both the Washington Capitals and the Wizards. And for Wizards broadcasts, this or at least I don't know if it's the main broadcast or not, but they had like interactive TV where people could do this kind of stuff, where they could try to predict what's going to happen during the game. So, I mean, it's real a lot of different options out there, and it's going to be interesting to see where this takes not just your phone, your digital device, but the broadcast itself as well. There's a lot of different stuff.
If you want people to pay $10 for a hot dog at a baseball game and sit there for 4 hours, entertain me.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Or let me be entertained.
That's right. He's Evan Sharpley, Sean Stiers. We're live at Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. The lunch special today is the breakfast grilled cheese, ham, bacon, egg, and cheese with tater tots, all for $8. And tell everyone real quickly about Reliable Roofing as well.
They do both commercial and residential roofing. 50-year warranty on shingled roofs. All their roofers are trained and certified to the highest standards in the industry. Give them a call at 574-302-7977. Again, 302-7977.
All right, we will get off the sports wagering kick next. We'll come back. We're going to talk a little quarterbacks. The Sporting News ranked their top college football quarterbacks for the season. Ian Book, where does he stand? We will tell you about that, get Evan's thoughts on it, and another baseball strategic question that came up this week that I want to get your input on. We'll do that next when we continue at Five Star Dive Bar. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, coming to you live from Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street in the former State Theater. Evan, we spent a lot, the entire first segment essentially, talking about sports wagering, sports betting coming to Indiana. The Sporting News this week has ranked its top college football quarterbacks going into the summer. Trevor Lawrence, the Clemson quarterback, is number one, followed by Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama at number two, then Jake Fromm, number three, Oregon's Justin Herbert, number four. Jalen Hurts, who transferred from Alabama to Oklahoma, is number 5. Sam Ellinger of Texas, number 6. Ian Book, number 7. Shea Patterson of Michigan, number 8. And Cole McDonald of Hawaii, number 9. Adrian Martinez of Nebraska is number 10. So what do you think about Book being sitting there at number 7? You good with that?
I'm good with that. I mean, there's some great quarterbacks on this list, but there's no denying the success that he had last year. You know, there's, I think, a lot more on his shoulders for this team to be successful, you know, coming this fall, just with the amount they lost on the defensive side. But, you know, if he's around that 70 to 75% completion clip with this offense, I think that, you know, he's going to be able to – I think it, this is similar to a couple years ago when I said they needed to score, you know, 30 a game.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's got to be that high. I think they have that potential. But he's a very accurate passer, slippery, you know, within and outside of the pocket, and can make a lot of the throws.
See, based on where the or where the defense is right now coming out of spring, and who knows, maybe it's going to end up being better than we think. But just based on that, I think they're going to have to score well over 30 points a game, just based on what we know right
now.
That's
scary.
Until we see
That's
something else. Yeah,
hear.
I know. It really – but, you know, they averaged it last year, so – we'll see. Now, by comparison, I found last year's list. Trace McSorley of Penn State was the number one quarterback per the Sporting News. Hmm. That's really interesting. And maybe for a college quarterback, you could argue that he's at least top five, but I found it interesting that he was number one. Tua was number two.
That was probably coming off of the Big Ten championship game the year before.
That's right.
And the bowl game where he played really, really well. So.
Yeah.
There could have been some buzz in the offseason leading up to last year with him.
Yep. They had Jake Fromm of Georgia at number 3, and that's where they've got him still this year. Khalil Tate, the Arizona quarterback, who's more of a runner than a passer. He is number 4. Will Greer from West Virginia was the number 5 quarterback last year. Then Jake Browning of Washington, who you really didn't hear a whole lot about this past year. Drew Locke of Missouri, number 7. So you've got Will Greer and Drew Locke, who both ended up in the NFL. They had Jalen Hurts at number 11. And that's what surprises me this year, is they have Jalen Hurts all the way up at number 5 for Oklahoma. And I just I realize that they've been able to plug in pretty quickly, going to Kyler Murray from Baker Mayfield. Yeah. But do you think that Jalen Hurts is going to run anything like look anything like that kind of quarterback, what those two guys looked like this year?
I bet he wants that.
Yeah, of course he does.
I mean, I would plug and play with that type of system. We don't really know. I mean, we've seen what he was able to do. Jalen Hurts did in high school, but then his college offense is much different. So, I think that I would be with you on this. Where I'm not discounting that he's a top 5 quarterback. I think that he may have to prove that within this new system.
Yeah.
I think he's got to be excited about what they're going to allow him to do.
And, I mean, maybe you could argue that he's a little bit underrated because of maybe some constraints that were put on him. But at the same time, that offense definitely looked a lot different once Tua went in there.
100%. So. You know what? I was surprised last year's list, who wasn't on there, is the number 6 overall pick in the draft, Daniel Jones.
That's true.
He's not even top 10.
That's true. I should have looked farther into the list. I didn't even think about looking for him down around 25 or so.
Kyler Murray was 18, and Trevor Lawrence was 25th. Haskins was 16th. So, you know, some other guys, you know, that were within the draft conversation this last year were not even top 10. Which is pretty surprising to see. And this year, one other guy that I would say is someone you could see pop up on this top 10 list is Jacob Eason, who's at Washington, who transferred from Georgia. But this is a good – I mean, this is a good crop of quarterbacks. And, you know, you look at the top of the list, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is – and really, Tua, too, both those guys are generational talents. I mean, I think – I was joking last year, if Trevor Lawrence could have gone pro after his freshman year, he probably would have been the first overall draft pick taken in this past year's draft. But you could say the same thing about Tua, too. I mean, just two really very talented football players, a good scheme that they're around, good coaching staff and the development side of things. So it'll be It'll be interesting when Trevor Lawrence and Clemson come to town, what, next year?
Yeah. I found last year's list, and Daniel Jones is not on it. Brian Lewerke of Michigan State was number 8 on last year's Sporting News list. Jarrett Stidham of Auburn, number 9. Mackenzie Milton of Central Florida, number 10. And he's a good quarterback.
I saw a video of him. He's walking now.
Is he?
Finally, yeah.
Well, that's good.
That gruesome leg injury.
Yep. Yep. So he'll be competing, of course, with Brandon Wimbush for a job this coming up fall. So which let me pose this to you since we were talking about Ian Book. Which do you think has the better chance of happening this upcoming season? Book is a Heisman Trophy finalist, whatever that means, and it varies. You know, they can take the top 3. They can take the top 4. I think it's up to 5, at least 4. Book is a Heisman Trophy finalist, or he leads the Irish back to the college football playoff.
For me, it's synonymous. I think if this Notre Dame football team is indeed one of the final 4 teams, it's going to be largely in part because he's putting up some silly numbers.
Yeah.
I don't think that one would happen without the other, where he puts up really good numbers, they're not very good, and he still gets an invite to the Heisman ceremony.
I would have to think so as well. I don't think that they could be a 2 or 3 loss team, but he's having a decent year or whatever and end up being the Heisman finalist, because especially with the quarterbacks, if you're there, it tends to have to do with not only your personal numbers but how your team is doing as well. So yeah. That's a good – I was kind of thinking along the same line, that they almost go hand-in-hand with each other.
Yeah, I think they're 100% synonymous.
All right. So now I've got a baseball question for you here, and – this was an interesting one. I skipped maybe the most important. No, well, not the most important, but the baseball question is still to come. I forgot.
What'd you forget?
The quarterback lab part of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. If I could make my own quarterback?
Yeah, if you were going to build
the perfect college
quarterback.
I've done this back when there was a college football game, you know. You can create your own player.
And put him in a video game.
On, like, PlayStation. Yeah. I've definitely done this, both college and pro.
And you won, like, 150 consecutive games, right?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, so if Evan was going to build, you're going to go into the quarterback lab, build the perfect college quarterback, what's he look like?
All right, well, I'm going to start with just kind of a couple of words. How about that?
Okay.
Which I think I would need those anyways if I was going to describe.
Sure.
Durability.
It's an adjective. Okay, durability.
High football IQ. Okay. And now if we're looking at the specs, there are quarterbacks that are, you know, I think traditionally most, well, let's say the NFL, prototypical, it's 6'4", 6'5", right? You're looking at guys now that are around that 6-foot mark and are having a lot of success. But I would say probably in the 6'3"-ish range, 215 to 220, athletic, run as needed. And can make all the throws with accuracy, I think, is the big thing. And then be able to have a strong enough arm to push the ball vertically down the field.
Okay. And vertically.
I think that checks
quite
a few of the boxes.
Absolutely.
You know, the new element that we've really seen, not that it wasn't there, but within offenses now, is you have to be able to at least pick up 5 to 8 yards if you're going to pull a zone read.
Right.
You got to.
The old immobile statue quarterbacks, Doug Williams of the past or whoever it happens to be, not really as much
these days. There are still programs. You look at Michigan State, Wisconsin, a lot of the Big Ten programs that still may line up under center and do some play action passing.
Smash mouth,
where you have more of a pocket style quarterback. But by and large, if you look at most conferences, and especially the teams that are putting up a lot of points, you have quarterbacks that can run and throw.
Okay, so Evan's checklist, durability, always good. High football IQ, always good. 6'3"-ish, 215 to 220. Athletic, throws with accuracy, and also has a big enough arm to push it vertically.
Yeah, sounds pretty good, right?
All right, so that's a pretty good list. And, I mean, really, I think that when you look at Ian Book as an example right now, he checks all but probably 2 boxes for sure, would you say? He's under 6'3".
And he probably doesn't weigh 215.
Yeah.
The one aspect that we haven't seen consistently is pushing the ball
vertically
down the field.
Right.
Very accurate on the short to mid range. If we're being picky and we want to see some growth, it's going to be being able to consistently hit the deep ball in some big when those chances present themselves. And
he missed
some throws that last year kind of left you scratching your head. Like, how does he thread the needle on a 14-yard comeback, or how is he moving to his left and throwing a ball across his body? But you have Chris Fink running wide open.
And
he'd be the same. He would tell you the same thing, too. I can't miss those throws.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be the next step, and I think at that point, then, he would check those boxes.
Okay. So those are your qualifications for a college quarterback. Does it change at all for an NFL quarterback in your mind?
Not a lot. More teams are building around that mold that I mentioned. But guys like Tom Brady, of course, prove that you don't necessarily have to run the football consistently, where he's able to stand in the pocket. He's very subtle in his movements. It's not that he's unathletic. They just rely on him to distribute the football and get them into the right play. Bottom line in the NFL, though, even if you are a guy that can extend plays with your feet or have an element of running, you have to be able to win with your arm.
Right.
It is imperative. You cannot be a run-first quarterback. You can have that as an added dimension, but you look at someone last year, Patrick Mahomes, who had a really good year. He's athletic enough and extend plays, but ultimately, what does everyone talk about? He could throw the ball 80 or 90 yards,
yeah,
and he's making throws that we don't see a lot of quarterbacks make.
Yep. You have to be accurate, and you also have to be deep accurate,
yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
And you have to make the quick decisions. And that's one thing that Ian Book does, but you can also argue that maybe he's too quick to go to the short stuff instead of looking long sometimes. Okay, so those are Evan's qualifications from the quarterback lab to build the perfect college and NFL quarterback. We're going to get this baseball question in just a minute. We're going to take a timeout first. And also, when we come back, I did this earlier this week with Darren. If you could pick five current athletes that Evan thinks could star in a superhero movie, who would you choose? Evan's going to do that when we return, plus this other interesting baseball question that popped up earlier this week, and we'll hit some NBA Finals talk as well in our final segment. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch from Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We are about 10 minutes away from 1 o'clock, final segment. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Evan, before we go any further, remind everyone again about Reliable Roofing.
Yeah, they've got a 50-year warranty on shingled roofs. They also do remodeling and additions, and their goal is to have their customers be wowed, both commercial and residential. Give them a call at 574-302-7977. Again, 302-7977.
And the lunch special today here at Five Star Breakfast Grilled Cheese with ham, bacon, egg, and cheese, and a side of tater tots for just $8.
Tonight, Zero is on stage at 10 p.m., and tomorrow night is Whiskey Highway.
That's right. I'm glad you had that. I had that before, but I didn't have it written down right now. Okay. Baseball question for you. Some guys we know in the Notre Dame Athletics Media Relations Department this week had this debate in their office, and then it spilled over after the first day that I guess they were having this debate, and they took it to Twitter to get other people's opinions about it as well. And I'm baffled why this is even a question, so I'm interested to see what your response is. Here's the situation. It's baseball. You're down 4-0 in the seventh inning. Is it better for your leadoff guy to homer or hit a double? What's your answer?
Well, I can tell you why this was a discussion.
Okay.
It's because Notre Dame baseball is 19-26, so they've probably been down 4-0 quite a few times this year.
So they're trying to solve that for them, right?
Yeah.
Solve the comebacks.
If we can get this figured out, then I say home run. I mean, a double and then a home run would be nice.
Yeah.
But I say home run, start the inning off with a little momentum and get things rolling. It's one on the board is better than a guy standing on second.
That's exactly it.
I mean,
that's exactly it. You can double, but there's no guarantee that that guy is going to score. And I said this again earlier this week. The baseball gods don't like leadoff doubles. They like leadoff walks.
It seems like a little bit of a no-brainer. Would you like to have no run still or one run?
That's right.
Now, if the follow-up question is, you know, okay, a double, and then you hit a home run.
What's the next guy going to do?
Okay, great.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not the way. 80% of the people who voted on their Twitter poll said a home run, and now they did post some data. Apparently, by fractions of a point, the double actually gives you a better chance to win somehow, which I don't get. But, I mean, like, again, like, if you're going to go to it, now the question is obviously leadoff double or leadoff home run, but a leadoff walk tends to, one, rattle your pitcher a little bit. It also, by definition, because he just walked a guy, means he's having some control issues. And so for whatever reason, when you have a leadoff walk, it seems like those guys tend to score. I don't know how many leadoff doubles I've seen in an inning where the guy ends up standing there at second base, or if he's lucky, he gets to third base. But the leadoff walk always seems to have a better chance to score.
They didn't have like a third option, like play better the first six innings.
don't be down going into the seventh inning.
That solves all of those problems.
That's right.
Let the other team figure this question
out. That's right. But at least if it's 4-0 and you're trailing, you're within slam territory.
Yes.
Grand slam territory. A grand slam ties it up.
I'm all for the leadoff home run. Get it done.
Completely with you as well. And I'm still not sure of the rationale on why you would want a double, which guarantees you no run at all. But that was the question. 80% went in our direction.
I'm sure if you pull the players, you know, they'd probably all say, yeah, give me a double instead of a home run.
That's right. And that's, I mean, they've got an RBI out of it as well. Okay, so I teased this going into our last break as well. 30 years ago this week, Michael Jordan hit his shot to beat the Cavaliers. He went on to star, of course, in the motion picture, the animated motion picture, Space Jam.
He hit the game winner in that show too, right?
That's right. Of course, LeBron James is trying to bring back a revised edition of Space Jam. If you could pick five current athletes that you think could star in a superhero movie, Evan, who would you choose, starting with number five?
Well, mine are in no particular order.
Okay.
I just have five that I'm listing. Okay, how about that?
Okay.
Luka Doncic from the Mavs.
That's an
interesting
one.
He kind of gives me like a Chris Pratt, Guardians of the Galaxy type of feel.
Okay.
All right. And plus, since he's young, he probably would appeal to the under 20 crew.
Okay.
I've got J.J. Watt down. Kind of a hulkish type of figure. He could probably be
He's
that.
Someone I considered.
Yeah. He could probably wear a cape, I would think.
Yeah.
I've got Serena Williams down.
Good one.
Kyrie Irving, who kind of already is a quasi.
What?
Superhero. He's Uncle Drew.
In what dimension? Oh, that's. I didn't think about that.
He's already got it going. Now you just give him some superpowers. The movies are already made. And then this one's weird. And I've been watching quite a few interviews of this certain gentleman. He's a baseball player. And it wasn't who is, like, best at their sport. Is who would maybe have some comedic appeal.
Okay.
Trevor Bauer.
He's on my list as well.
I thought he'd be a good pick. I don't know what his superpower would be or what he'd do, but.
Well, he's an engineering grad.
Okay, yeah.
And he's really into, kind of like you, the sort of the science of the sport. So he's almost like a mad scientist. And then, so he could be like
he could have a day job of being a mechanical engineer or something. Okay.
His lab blows up, and then all of a sudden he's firing two-seam fastballs and sliders at you, and they blow up or something.
I don't know that.
And then what I was saying is like kind of like in a comic book, how you have the bubbles and stuff, that either the thought bubbles or where the commentary goes. Since Trevor Bauer is so active on Twitter, like in his movie, you know, like, you've got like the Twitter bubbles that would be floating around and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So Serena Williams is someone Darren mentioned.
Oh, really?
And I think that's a good one.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great one.
As well. Yeah. And I hadn't considered. I'm a little stumped on Kyrie Irving. I guess your Uncle Drew kind of makes sense, but superhero, eh. My list was Quentin Nelson.
Okay.
From the Colts. And I mean, he obviously is just a masher, and just call him Big Q. And like, he could bop somebody on the head and they'd be springing.
Apparently Mike McGlinchey's superpower is taking his Sharks jersey, putting
right.
it over his head, and chugging beer. So
that's right. I had Trevor Bauer. I had Jose Altuve.
Okay.
Because I like the undersized super, you know, yep. Mighty Mite kind of thing with Jose Altuve. And then I've got the Greek Freak.
I considered him.
Right there.
Yeah.
And then I Tom Brady is my number one just because he's Tom Brady. He's got star power.
Too.
And he's almost like Clark Kent during the day and Superman when he puts on the uniform. So
I'm good with those.
All right. I like your list as well. And J.J. Watt just kind of has that. He's kind of got his own star appeal
right.
as well. All right, we got to wind things down. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch. If you missed any of the show, of course, you can go to WSBTRadio.com, the WSBT app, and listen to the podcast. We are also on iTunes. You can do that. Don't forget, we spent a lot of time talking about sports betting coming to the state of Indiana. Armin Katayan will join Darren and I tonight right off the bat at the beginning of Budweiser's weekday sports beat at 5 o'clock to talk more on that subject. I will talk to you next week.
See you later.
All right. For Garrett Kaser, Evan Sharpley, Sean Steyers, WSBT South Bend.